Hello, John.
Hello, yes, John speaking.
It's Steve Blacknell, John.
Steve, hello, mate. How are you?
Long time no see, as they say.
Yeah, I've got to get up to London and come to one of your little party days one day.
Well, let's hope when it starts. So, how have you been? It's a funny old time for you and the missus, yeah? Or been enjoying yourself? What have you been doing?
Well, you know, it's been a bit of a pain. It's but the upside is we've managed to, before that awful thing came, we were doing a bit of recording. We actually put the drums down and bass. So we've been recently just going to Pete's house and putting guitars on, because we're planning, hopefully, to get an album out.
Blimey, he said.
Yeah. It's sounding great. I'm really pleased. The guys have been writing songs. So, you know, because hopefully everyone knows I play all the hits from when I was with Status Quo. So, but we, you know, the recording side is all of our own work. So it won't be re-recording Quo, of course. But, you know, it's going to be great, Steve.
Great stuff. Now, I've known you and Julie, your good lady, God, quite some years. But you know what? I was picking the phone up. Have you, honest truth, have you always been a drummer? I mean, when you started out in music, was you born into the drums, or were you fiddling about with other things?
No, the thing is, right from the start, Mum and Dad used to love ballroom dancing. We lived in South London. They took me up to Crystal Palace, the CPH, was Crystal Palace Hotel, and they had big dance bands on at the weekends. They'd take me up there. I suppose they didn't want to pay for a bloody babysitter, I suppose. And so I sit in the corner watching the old ballroom dancing, and I watched the drummer, and I thought, God, I like that, that's good. Then I saw the bass player, double bass player, and I thought, no, that's a better idea. Then I thought, no, hang on, the drummer's got a better job, he's got a seat at every gig, I'll do that.
That'll do it. And you've been sitting down ever since?
Yeah, I get paid to sit down, it's wonderful, Mush.
Yeah, I've heard of a stand-up comic, but you're a sit-down musician. This is great. What a job. And you get money for it.
So
when you started out then, because again, I don't know this, because I just know you from Quo, really, don't I? And Rick, bless him. But when you started out then, it wasn't dance bands, obviously, was it? Or pop groups or what?
No, what it was, I joined the Air Cadets at school, and now everything leads to something else by joining one thing, and it leads to something else. And what happened, we put a lot of groups together, Squadron 1475 Squadron, Dulwich in South London, and on the South Circle. And I remember it well. It was just a little hut by the TA, Territorial Army. And so we all joined up, cadets and that. And we put a group together in the squadron, and we're just doing shadow stuff, really, at weekends, and not really playing anywhere, just in the grill hall. Then two guys kept coming in and saying, look, excuse me, can we listen, mate? He said, yeah. Anyway, cut a very long story short, those two guys were Francis Rossi and Alan Lancaster.
Oh, yeah. Good God, I never knew that.
No, seriously, because what they were doing, Alan Lancaster at the time, I believe, so we're all school, see, we're still secondary school kids, and he was playing trumpet. I think Francis was playing something else. But then they said, they crept over and said, John, would you be interested in joining our band? We've got a little band. So I thought, well, the cadets aren't doing anything. So basically I said, yeah, cool. So my dad drove me down, got a taxi next weekend, drove down. I remember Francis saying to me, he said to Alan Lancaster, he said, God, look, John's turned up in a taxi. He must be rich.
The shape of things to come.
Yeah.
And so that went on. So then where does Rick, God bless his soul, where does Rick fit into the pattern here?
Yeah, what happened, see, there was Francis Rossi, Alan Lancaster, and me, a guy called Jesse Volsky, who's a keyboard player. And we had a guy called Pat Barlow who wanted to look after the manager of the band anyway. So he said, look, there's an audition coming up in London, I think it was, and it was for summer season, wait for it, at Butlins in Minehead.
Not Butlins in Minehead.
Oh, it was, man. It was great. And I tell you what it was like in those days. It was exactly like Heidi High. It was hilarious. And we went and played in London, and we did the right songs and the cover songs, of course. And I think we were called the Spectres in those days.
That's it. I remember that, yeah.
And they said, right, you've won this competition, blah, 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 blah. And they got us down to Butlins. But the buzz was, we were away from our homes for, I think it was 6 weeks, Steve. It was amazing. And to be away from your parents at a young age. The only downside was that we had to get our own B&B. Because if you were an artist or entertainer, working on those camps, you had to get your own B&B. You weren't allowed to stay on the camp. I got work.
Right.
Yeah.
you wouldn't know it, would you? The very thought of it all. But it must have been really exciting. Really exciting.
It was fun because we you know, when we weren't playing, we go to the. So what we were doing, we were playing the rock and roll ballroom, and some of the times we had a bit of time off, and we go to see go in the theatre. There's some acts on, and there was a guy called Rick Harfitt with two girls. And they called the Highlights, and they were doing serious cabaret sort of stuff. Mm. Yeah, the twins, they were identical. And so, you know, then Pat Barlow said, oh, we've got to get Rick in the band. We said, you sure? He's wearing like a pink jacket and blonde hair. We thought, Joe, he's not rock and roll. But anyway, that long story short, Pat said, we must get, he's got a great voice, which is absolutely true. So then he loved the band. And I think Butlins was 1965, and I joined the little group in 62, I believe. So Rick, yeah, Rick loved it, and he said, "You'll join." And of course, that was the start. Then we were called the Status Quo, which is a bit silly. And eventually, 68 came. We got a recording contract with Pi, and we released Pictures of Matchstick Men. So that started our career off. Right? But then we dropped the, and it was just called Status Quo.
Well, as in preserving the status quo, I suppose, when you think about it, I guess. But I've done some telly with you in the past, and this has come up, and I remember asking you on telly on Sky about this, but it still bemuses me why in the 60s drummers were always in the front of the back. No, always. You with Quo, Kenny Jones.
Yeah.
With the small faces in the front of the right up the camera's nose.
Yeah, that's right.
What was that?
I don't know. It wasn't our idea. It was obviously the producer's idea. Thought it was a great idea, and to look at the girls, it was probably great. But I suppose they felt that drummers were always at the back, and they put us down the front. It's a very odd feeling, but you know, it was. Well, but so we had quite a few hits in that vogue of that sort of silly jackets and. Blooming the frilly shirts and baggy trousers. We certainly got rid of that later on in life and reinvented ourselves.
Yeah, into the Quo that we, well, know and loved. And of course, bounding on a bit, sad loss for about Rick. That was mourned, wasn't it? I knew him quite well myself, and was a sad loss. But of course, that was recently, but you were sort of long gone from the band, John, and you've been doing quite well yourself still.
Yeah, we've because at 81 we all patched it in when I did, and we sort of all agreed to disagree. But I just think we needed a lot of time off. I would have been happy if I had a couple of months break and just gone away and not played for one, had a holiday. But as you know, in those days, everyone was working flat out, and but then when the thing hit the fan, I sort of went back to the Isle of Man, where I live, because it was for taxes originally. Then, but then we just stayed for 10 years, would you believe? But and I said, right, let's go away. She just reminded me we got married.
Blimey, that's your dinner gone, John. Well, you forgot to say that.
I nearly thought she was going to get me to play at my own wedding, but fortunately.
When you was on the Isle of Man,
yeah.
Didn't Norman Wisdom live there at some time? Yeah. He wasn't there when you were there, was he?
Yes.
Yeah, he was. What happened when we were paying some stupid money out for tax, you know, and then we were told by the accounts, Rick Parfitt went to Jersey, Francis was in Ireland anyway, and Alan Lancaster was in Sydney, Australia. So I went to the Isle of Man because I'd kept popping over there because I got divorced first. Then I went to the Isle of Man, stayed with a friend called Trevor Baines and some lovely friends in the island. And they said, look, if you've got to do the tax, why don't you come over to the Isle of Man? And Trev said, I can sort things out with the paperwork, I presume. And next thing is, I bought a house on a clifftop. You'll love this. I bought this lovely little farmhouse on a clifftop, 4 acres, by the seaside with steps down to the beach. Then one day I heard this noise of a jet aircraft. I thought, bloody hell, what's that? And I realised the house I bought in the sea was about 2 miles. That was a NATO bombing range. Oh, man. It was because I love aeroplanes.
You didn't know that? When surely, were the surveyors or at the time, did you not know that?
Well, we knew there was some, like barges, with two barges with flashing lights, and you know, the thing was, Steve, it was quite a way away, so they didn't drop any bombs on the house. But it was fascinating. And one day, it's like everything else in life, you get to know people after a while when you're living there. And one day we heard this noise, and I said to you, that's not well, oh yeah, sorry, they were F-111s coming from Upper Hayford, United States Air Force, and they just do this flash bombing and all, the job of practice bombing, just go like bang, there's a little bang, there's no big explosion, right? Then, you know, then one day the Vulcan bomber came over, the RAF, and did the same thing. And so I've actually seen a Vulcan bomber dropping his bombs. It was quite amazing. But we just sit on the clifftop with a glass of wine and watch the bombing going on in the daytime. It's quite amazing.
Well, that was sort of a semi-retirement, I suppose, wasn't it? And at that time, were you thinking, oh, bugger the kit, I'm not doing that again? Or were you still thinking, oh, no, I've got to rock and roll, etc.?
I think it doesn't leave you, the system.
Yeah,
want to give it up. Then I know a couple of people who've actually done that, and I was having lunch with one, I won't mention who it was, but just like pretty miserable and fed up. And just and I've seen you see these people leave a factory when going to retire, they look extremely happy at first, and I always find a bit, you get to know them a bit later on, they're terribly bored, and their dog's been walked about 500 times in a week.
Even if it didn't want to be, yeah. and another thing that strikes me now, and I don't know this, it strikes me I don't know much about your past at all, John, although we're chums. Spud. You're known as Spud. All right. Yeah. Why are you known as Spud?
I remember that. I remember the day. Well, I don't remember the actual day, but we were walking down Wardour Street in Soho, and we'd all been to this shop, which you remember all the clothes we used to wear on Top of the Pops? Amy Corner were the same.
Yeah.
Flash jackets and baggy trousers, like maroon red trousers and all frilly blue shirts. And it was all pop star time. And these trousers, obviously, were slightly too big and they were like falling down the back end. And I think, and not literally falling down, but Rick Harvey said, your trousers look like a bowl of spuds, man. And that's how Spud cut, like the sack of spuds. Yeah, that name stuck. So, when we got rid of those clothes, and Bob Young said, reinvent yourselves because we won't have any more hits after one. So what we did, we grew our hair long. We wore Levi jeans and a T-shirt and played all colleges and universities. And people were saying, Status Quo, they're not a boogie band. And of course, they had different songs. In My Chair was the first hit for that time.
That's right.
And you know, it paid off. I remember one place we played it because Bob Young said, look, we won't get announced, we'll just walk on. Because in those days, in the 70s, it was cool. It was a bit cool just to walk on and go, you know, hi, man, how you doing, and all that rubbish.
Yeah.
And this guy insisted, he came to the dressing room and says to Bob, right, 10 minutes, guys. Yeah. And Bob said, well, don't announce that, we just like to walk on it. Oh, no, he said, no. He says, I always have to announce the bands. It happens every week and people expect it. And he kept going on. And we said, look, Bob, let him do it. And we just walk on. All right. And so we're standing in the wings waiting to go on. So there's a load of students. They've got all long hair and everything. The girls looking great. And anyway, so he walked on stage. As he walked on stage, there's a massive cheer. Oh, here comes Dave. His name's probably Dave, I presume. I don't know. Anyway, he goes, ladies and gentlemen, I've got this band here. I think he'd been out of it. He's been smoking some wonga.
Yeah.
And he said, this band's here that you've been waiting for. for months. Ladies and gentlemen, they are here.
That was
true.
It.
That is true, Steve. We forgot who we were.
I don't know. Yeah, there's so many stories of compares. My good friend Nick Carpenter, my producer, he tells a story. There was a guy up north, evidently. He was going on. It was a Lula was doing a cabaret thing. And wow. He said something akin to, because Nick tells the story very well. It was something akin to, will you please stop smoking and putting the butts down in the toilet channel there? Because it makes the place smell of piss. Here's Lulu.
Wow.
And I thought that was another great introduction.
What did Lulu think of that?
I just don't know. Nick would know, but that just struck me as the smell of piss. Here's Lulu. I mean, just without hesitation, you know. Just going back a bit, just very quickly, going back to Amy Corner, I was talking to a great chum of mine, Alan Jones, who Alan, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, I was living with him in Hollywood for 2 years because his wife was my manager in Hollywood when I was out there.
Oh, yeah.
But Alan was telling me of great Amy Corner stories about package tours with Hendrix and just great stories. Were Quo did Quo back then? Did you do package stuff like that?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did two. We did Gene Pitney was the top of the bill. Eamon Corner, Don Partridge. I'll tell you a story about Don Partridge. We're on this English tour, you know, Granada's and bits, little theatres, Odeons, and it was hilarious. And Don Partridge said to me, John, he said, yeah, Jono, I noticed you guys don't really have a drink before you go on stage. And he didn't know exactly. He was, every gig, he'd have a couple of bottles of Matthias Rosé. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. It smelt like wee.
Yeah, funny yeah. Shape bottle. And he said, come on, Jono, just have a couple of drinks and we'll be all right, Mush. Anyways, I watched him go out on stage. He goes out, he has a guitar, a bass drum and a hi-hat, you know. And it tied to his ankle, and as he moved his leg, the cymbal or the bass drum would make a noise. And anyway, so he walks on stage. He's pissed now, right? So he walks on, and he goes, "Hello, how are you going?" Yeah. And he starts to tune up. Now you're supposed to be tuned up before you go on stage, as you know. But he starts slow hand clapping. He goes, all right, I'm just doing me fucking guitar." Sorry, I shouldn't have spoiled, but, you know, he said, I apologise, he said, I'm just trying to tune my guitar, that's all, what's the matter with that? Wrong things at stage, but he's going mental. Anyway, he goes, oh, bloody right, of course, he starts moving around the stage, and his cymbal goes, ah, man, he was a legend. He got a total telling off, but then one night we were playing some place up north, and we ended up going to a nightclub, and we all of us, I think, on the show got a bit pissed, and I think I said, and I got a bit silly. Then we were asked, right, all these bands out to this club, go away. And we said, then in the morning we got on the bus, this doom and gloom on the bus, right? Oh, bloody Coughlin got us thrown out last night, it's his bloody fault. Anyway, so Gene Pitney gets on. So, hey guys, what's wrong? What's wrong here, man? Everyone's lucky, miserable. So this guy said, yeah, Coughlin got thrown out last night because he said a few words, blah, blah, blah. They didn't like it. He said, so, you got thrown out of a nightclub? What's wrong with that? Oh, and all the bands went, oh, Gene thinks it's okay. It's real.
Amazing, just incredible when you think that Hendrix toured with the Monkees and Don Partridge and Quo. It must have been amazing days.
Did you ever meet Noel Redding, Steve?
Yeah, no, I met Mitch Mitchell, but never Noel Redding. But I've heard stories.
Oh, Noel was so lovely because many moons ago, Noel asked me to play drums for him, and there was me and Noel and Eric Bell, and we looked three-piece playing blues. It was fantastic.
Uh-huh.
And he said, why don't you come over to Clonakilty and stay for the weekend? Because he was living with his mum, his girlfriend died. Anyway, so we're in Clon and having a few drinks, and he said, tomorrow, Johnny, I'm going to take you to this pub that's in the middle of nowhere. I thought, that sounds great. Anyway, so we lunchtime, we get in his car, drives me to this place in near Cologne, and he goes, there it is, and there's a crossroads with four fields. No, nothing, four fields, and a man, it looks like it just fell out of the sky, massive. So we go in there, and it's empty, of course, 12 o'clock. And the next thing is, this lovely lady comes out from behind the bar. Hello, Noel, how are you? Is it a drink you wanted? And he goes, no, the bloody 3:30, you talks, of course, on the bloody drink. It was like that all the time, man.
I've heard the stories of excess and all that, but it must have been incredible. But I mean, yeah, that's so. That was then. This is now. So, but you're obviously with your own band. You're doing really well, aren't you? It must be great being back there again.
Yeah, because it's called John Coghlan's Quarry, because initially we was thinking. I could have called it Diesel, man. The Diesel and Mickey Moody film, man, or that. That was years ago. But I thought, well, I need to have a band's name with choir on it, because then people know what I play. You know, I don't want to call it John Coghlan's Status Quo. I don't think that's fair. But John Coghlan's Quo is what's stuck. Everyone likes it. And we've got thousands upon thousands of fans that look on the internet. Go, oh, John's playing, you know, Grimsby's playing Portsmouth, or he's playing Southampton. Oh, we come to that gig, and we're doing really well at the gigs. And, of course, we've got a single that's we put out, as you know, called Lockdown, and written by the band. And, you know, Pete Mace wrote the guitar parts, Rick Chase, the bass player, wrote the words, and it's worked out very well.
It's funny, that Lockdown. Why did you pick that particular title, John?
Do you know, I didn't know. I wonder if anything to do with what's going on in the world. I have no
nothing at all. Pure coincidence.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. The guys just thought Lockdown would be all right. I don't think anyone else has thought of the idea of it, but it's worked, and it sounds just like 70s Quo.
Well, there can't be much better. And John, as always, give my regards to the woman in your life.
Yeah.
And if you bump into Jilly, give her my best as well.
Yes, she's sitting right next to me.
John Coghlan, thank you, Johnny. Thanks so much, and we'll see you very soon, yeah?
Thank you, Steve. I loved it. Thank you, mate.
Ta-da, mate.
Bye-bye.